And we're back.
All right.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun designing applications.
Yeah. So we left it on that cliffhanger where we had some pretty looking pages, but they didn't kind of do very much.
Right.
Good alignment. And they're theme aware, so they work with the white background or the dark background, which, incidentally, is one of the most common causes of failures when you submit an app.
There's nothing worse than app rejection.
Yeah, it hurts.
Yeah.
It really hurts.
It does hurt.
We're going to pick it up. If we go over to the slides,
are you finally going to throw a bone to the hardcore developer guys?
You mean actually do some code?
Yes.
I don't do that sort of thing.
Can't we just design everything without the code?
Design is crucially important.
I agree, it's crucial.
So, here we go. So, this is session M3, which has the subtly different title of building Windows Phone applications. So yeah, we've changed from designing Windows Phone applications because we now have kind of got our pages. Most of the ingredients are there. We've talked about the layout, as I said. But now we need to actually start doing some navigation. A lot of this stuff in this session is still all about presentation, but we're going to do things like handle the different screen resolutions, orientation changes, the application bar, navigation between pages, and that sort of thing. So this is where we're at in the schedule, and this is where we're going to go tomorrow. And then in this one, page navigation, is start with the application bar, what you want to do about orientation changes, if anything. You don't necessarily have to do anything.
Right.
Screen resolutions. This is obviously a big new feature for Windows Phone 8. What you need to do about that. Also about localization, because there's good support in the project templates for making localization a bit easier to implement, so we'll look at that. Then I'm going to look at there's nice subtle animations, and what we're going to do there is look at the Windows Phone toolkit and what's in it. There's a whole bunch of extra great controls, but more importantly, there is some really nice transition animations. So that's the goal for this sort of 45 minutes or so. Starting with page navigation. So if you remember where we left it, we had the regions list. And you pressed on it and nothing happened.
We need
to navigate once you've selected an item. So let's talk about page navigation. In fact, let's talk about frame and page navigation. So the frame is this top-level container control. And if you actually drill down into app.xaml.cs or .vb, you'll find a section that's collapsed by default, which is your total starter, the bootstrap logic for your app, if you like.
Right.
And the first object your app creates is a thing called a phone application frame, this frame object. That is the top-level control in which all of your pages sit. Now, you don't really program the phone application frame. It just is.
It just is.
But it contains the page control and the page system, elements such as the system tray and the application bar. And then you create your pages that fill that entire area, and we've created two pages so far, the main page and the recipe detail page. So, page navigation. Here's a little simple example. We've got a two-page app.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, XAML apps on Windows Phone use a page-based navigation model, which is fairly reminiscent, similar to web pages. Mm. So, as with web pages, each page is identified by a URI. Now, this is important as well. Each page is essentially stateless. I said before we had that on navigated to, where you put your logic to set the page up. So really, you want to think of every page as being a self-contained entity. You put its startup logic in on navigated to, and then when the user navigates away from the page, if they navigate forward, then they'll go to some other page. If they navigate back, they'll go back to wherever they came from, and the page that they're just leaving will be destroyed. So if you're going to navigate forward, this is a forward navigation. So we're going in this example, you can see on the images there, we're going from main page, which has got a hyperlink control on it, which has the text navigate to second page. And when the user clicks that hyperlink control, the logic that's in that box there will execute. Navigation service.navigate. So every page can access the navigation service, which is a kind of app-wide service to navigate. And you give it, the parameters you give to that navigate is a URI. You give it a URI, which is the destination page. And then you need to give it a URI kind. There's actually three URI kinds. Absolute, which typically means an HTTP absolute URL out on the internet. There's relative, which means it's relative to the root of the application. So that's the one you typically use inside your app. And then there's one called URI kind.absolute or relative, which kind of covers all the bases, really.
Yeah. Excellent.
It just figures it out for itself based on the usage. So
I like that.
Yeah, there you go. So that's the simple navigation. So now we're on the second page, and there's a button on it, as you can see, which has the text in it. Navigate back to main page. That's a button, incidentally, in case you haven't realized, a square thing there.
Yes.
And the user could click that button, and we can simply go back. So there's a page history stack at work here. So we started on main page, and then we navigate to second page. When you finish with second page, you can navigate back to main page again. So it's like a stack of pages, history stack. Now, you don't have to. In fact, it's bad practice to have a button like that.
Really?
So it is. It is, really.
Because on other platforms, the developer actually has to put some kind of icon with an arrow going back to get back.
Yeah. So one of the key usability, one of the key user experiences for Windows Phone is that there is that button on the bottom left there, the one that's a hardware button. You have three buttons on every Windows Phone. The back button on the left, the Windows icon in the middle there, and then the search on the right, which launches the web browser to do a search. And if the user presses the back button, the hardware back button, it actually does exactly the same as navigationservice.goback. It will navigate back from whatever page you're on to the previous page. And if you hit the back button while you're on main page, there's nowhere to navigate to. In actual fact, that is the primary way that a user will close the app.
Okay.
I nearly said the only way to close an app. And strictly speaking, that's true. The only way you can navigate, close an app is to navigate away from, back from the main page. So you get that for free. So, you know, say, okay, well, why do I have to worry about backwards navigation? Well, there are some instances when you might want to override that back key thing. So maybe you're on a page. Remember I said every page is stateless. So a user might have been interacting with a page, maybe entered some values. And when the user has finished and navigates away from that page, you might want to save that data that they've entered into an underlying storage file or something. So you might want to know when they've hit the back key and run some code, which is going to then write some stuff into a file and save it away into a file underneath. And then you can let the backwards navigation to continue. Now, the other reason why you might want to intercept that back hardware back key press is maybe you've got a page that is this kind of aware of many cloaks. It shows up looking like something, and then the user presses some button or something, and maybe you show a new grid on top of it that overlays, hides all the original content. This is perfectly valid in XAML.
I have one of those apps in the store, actually,
do.
That does that.
Okay.
And I had to do what I think you're talking about.
Which is, you've got to do the logical thing by the user.
Yes.
So if the user is looking at the new presentation of the page, the overlay, the pop-up,
right.
Then when they hit the back button, they will be expecting the pop-up to disappear and go back to what they were looking at before. But the default behavior of navigationservice.goback is to blur away the whole page. It doesn't have any concept of pop-up panels and things. So in that instance, you're going to want to capture that back key press, hide the pop-up, and then cancel that backwards navigation so that the user gets what they expected, which is to stop the pop-up from showing, but you haven't actually broken your app by navigating back to main page. So this is how you do it. You override the back key. There is an event called back key press on the page, which you can hook. Here we've got an example of hooking it in the actual XAML at the top of the page there, back key press equals, and then the name of the event handler. And then down below it, you can actually see the code of the phone application page, back key press event handler. So it has this cancel event args that's passed into it. If you set the cancel property of that cancel event args to true, what you're doing there is telling the system, don't worry, I've got this. Cancel your backwards navigation. Don't navigate back through the pages. I'm going to run some code and I'll sort this out. So you'll have the code in there to hide that pop-up panel or something. So that's what you do. Now, okay, so now we can navigate forwards and we can navigate back. But the other thing you, of course, are going to need to do is to communicate something from first page. So if we've got a list of recipe types, for example, on our page, and the user selects French, and then you're going to go to the next page, which is a page that displays the details of the selected region, the one that the user has chosen, you need to tell that page to, hey, show the details for the French region. You need to communicate to it the context.
This person wants to go to a boulangerie.
Yeah, a boulangerie.
And so take them there.
Yes, indeed. So we need to tell from page one where the list was, we need to tell page the recipe region page which one to show. because obviously you're not going to have a separate one for each region. You're going to have a multi-purpose one. So what you're going to do, so again, keeping with that web model, you add onto your URI a query string. So you have a new URI slash secondpage.xaml, and then you can stick something on a query string. So in this example on the slide, you've got question mark MSG equals some text. Again, it's URI kind.relative. And then on the destination page, so that will then navigate to secondpage.xaml. And in the onNavigated to, you want to go and look in the query string to see what's been passed to you. So you'll use some code such as that shown there. If navigationContext.querystring.tryGetValue, and then you're looking to see whether you've been passed an MSG value in the query string. There may be multiple ways of navigating to this page, so you can't be sure it'll always be there. So that's why you're going to use this tryGetValue. If it finds an MSG in the keyed item in the query string, it will extract the value, which is whatever was passed, and then you can use it on the destination page.
You know, Andy, I can see how web developers would be right at home
they
with this model.
They would be right at home with this, yes.
Yeah, you know, stateless pages, query strings. Yeah. Our ASP.NET developers are used to, in that onNavigated, that's the same as when they catch on a server side and take apart that query string to know what to do with it.
Yep.
Same principles.
Same principles.
Same concepts.
Totally, yeah. Yeah,
definitely.
And as you'll learn, as we go on through this 2-day of training, there's a number of ways which pages can be launched. You don't always start an app on main page, is what I'm saying. There's a number of ways you can deep link. We mentioned this concept already. You can actually launch an app at some arbitrary page. You could have a tile on the start screen, which is just about sports scores for your favorite team. So you're going to launch into some page, might be deep in your app hierarchy, on that page, and in the onNavigated too, you're going to pull out some of the query string parameters.
So just like on the internet, people dive right into parts of a website deeply.
Totally.
They don't always go to the home page to start.
Yeah, exactly so. So yeah, we're going to pass the data between the pages, so that's pretty nice. Now, query strings are a little bit limited. They are strings. It's just a string. So, and of course, any application tends to work with not just with strings, but it works with a collection or with an object. A data object is an entity that has multiple properties, and you need to actually communicate that object across to the destination page. How do you do this? So, actually, the one solution is to have your view models. Hey, there's a go. This is our view models again. You could have your view model for your app, is actually owned by your app class. Now, the app class is the one I mentioned, which is where your bootstrap logic goes. There's always an app.xaml class in every application. And the code in there is where your bootstrap startup logic is. But it's also a good place to put some, maybe to hang off the data, for a simple app anyway, to hang off the data for your application.
So you can always count on that.
It's always
there. Memory for in any part of the app.
Your app class is the one thing you can be sure of. It will be there for the entire life of your application.
Okay.
Global to the whole app. So that's your data collection. That becomes the collection of all your data objects. So our collection of recipes in this Contoso cookbook that we've been working on.
Okay.
And then so what you're going to do in the query string is when the user has selected a particular region, you'll pass the ID of that region in the query string. And then on the destination page and the onNavigated to, you can extract that ID. So here we do. Here we're passing the ID of the selected item in the query string, and then in the it's not there. Okay. And then in the onNavigated to on the destination page, you'll pull that out and query into the collection of objects on which is owned by the app class, and you know, and show the right data.
So this app class is like some kind of static singleton kind of thing that anybody can. That's great.
Yeah. So that's one way of doing that. There's other ways, of course.
Sure.
That the pictures there you can see on that slide is the, I've mentioned this a couple of times, the second project template. When you create a new project, there's the data-driven template.
Right.
You just create one of them and study how it works. That's exactly what this does. It's a great way of figuring.
It's a good learning tool.
Brilliant learning tool. Just take a look at the generated code. It's simple and you'll understand what's going on. Right, so we're going to apply all this to the next iteration of our application. So here we go. We left it in this limbo. Here's our beautiful list. Isn't that a lovely list? But which doesn't do anything. So we'll close that and move on to the next one, which is not much changed, but it does actually have the navigation embodied in it. So here we go. So if we look at the code now, for this Solution Explorer, our main page.xaml. Let's go and look at the code behind for that. When the user selects an item from that recipe list, we are here, listgroups.selection, changed. This code executes. A bit of defensive programming, make sure, because this selection changed event fires when nothing is selected. So you can check for it not being null, because we don't want that would break. And then we navigate to this thing called group detail page, and we put into the query string ID equals, and then we pass the unique ID of the recipe that's been selected there. And then if we go and look at group detail page, in the onNavigated2, here's the stuff. If the navigation context query string contains ID, we find that group, app.recipes, is in our app class. There we go, it's hanging off our app class. And then we set the data context of our pivot to point at that group. And we've applied similar logic through the rest of this thing. So now we will get, just starting this up in the emulator, we can go to French, and it will go to French. Woohoo!
It works.
And then we've got a list of recipes, and we can select a bouillabaisse, and it goes to bouillabaisse.
Excellent.
And there's our nicely laid out page that
I'm ready for lunch, I think.
Unfortunately, we're not quite there yet.
Okay.
And there's an ingredients list on the second pivot, so it's all coming together. And I can hit the back button here. It's going to go back from the recipe where we were, back to the previous page, which was the recipes list, this French regional one. Not very meaningful text there. Some Latin has crept in there, so we've still got some work to do. And back again, and we're back at the main page, and we could go to a different one. I'm not going to go back again. The app closes. So there we go.
Perfect.
Perfect. All right.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. Next. What do we want to do next? So we want to add some additional options onto some of these pages.
Right.
Now, when you want to offer kind of actions on a page and that sort of thing, or if you want to offer a navigation that's not from a list like that, you want to offer some different things, or maybe an option to take a picture. In fact, we have got that in this application. So the Contoso cookbook, we're going to want to add a button on so that the user can, when they're creating their own, we're going to sort of start to creep in a bit of social networking features into this app. So
that's just like you to do that.
It's totally needed. So when they have created bouillabaisse or whatever, and they pull it out of the oven and it's a beautiful looking thing, they can whip out their phone, take a picture, and say, I made that. Yeah. And it will store it in the user's, we're going to have another pivot where they can store their photos. So that kind of user options, we will use an application bar. So back to this is our anatomy of the page again. The application bar is where you can put buttons for the most common task. It appears on the bottom of the page. You can have up to four buttons, or you can have a number of textual menu items underneath as well. So use up to four buttons. Don't feel you have to use them all.
Right.
The user swipes up the bar, they see the little ellipsis there on the application bar down there. If they swipe that up, you can see textual menu items as well. Now, those icons, you actually get a bunch of pre-created ones shipped with the SDK for the common things you're going to want to do. Those ones on that slide are all custom ones. You can create custom icons. If you do, all you need to do is create them as a white foreground on a transparent background, and they need to be 49 by 49 pixels.
Okay.
But you can look in the docs for that. You don't create the circle around that. The system will draw that for you. So you just do the content in the middle. Do it on a transparent background and make it a white foreground, and it will automatically make that theme aware. So if the user has chosen the white theme, it will actually draw up your custom icons in black on a white background. So you don't have to supply two sets, which is pretty nice. And this is what the XAML for an application bar looks like. Here we've got, in our phone application page, got application bar. We've got two icon buttons in there and two menu items. So each icon application bar icon button, as you can see there, has a icon URI property, which points to the actual image. And we have a search button, which also points at an icon URI to another search image. And you'll see that they also have a little bit of text, because you have to have a little hint on each application bar button in case your icons, God forbid, are not intuitive. And then you have a click event, so that when anybody actually interacts with that button, you run some code. Similar for the menu items, but of course there's no image associated with them. And it's quite cute in landscape format. They paint, the application bar paints up on the side of the screen, which is nice because, you know, we've got kind of in that orientation, we've probably got space to spare on either side. Whereas if you were to keep it on the bottom, you'd be taking up too much valuable screen real estate. And you get the icons rotate very nicely into position when you, the user switches the phone from portrait to landscape and back again. And if the user swipes the application bar out, this is what it looks like. You see your menu items, and that tiny little word next to it is actually the hint, which you won't be able to read. But obviously on a real phone, you'd be able to read what that hint was, so a short little word. You can set the opacity to less than 100%, in which case you then have that area underneath to paint your own content onto. So yours will sort of shine through from the background.
Okay.
So
well,
in certain circumstances, that might be an option for something you want to do. This was one of those things that you always used to have to design in Blend, but you can now do that in Visual Studio as well. So that's another thing that where they've added tooling to Visual Studio to make your life easier as an application developer, because it's one of those things that, you know, doesn't need to be in Blend. You can do that. It's
right.
Something that people are always sort of working with. So let's have a quick look at how that works in the Contoso cookbook.
That's good. You know, one of our MVPs, one of mobile MVPs on Twitter, is
all
just
right.
commenting
MVPs,
that they are so glad that they've already had lunch because this whole demo with the recipes, you know, I can see how it's getting people really hungry.
Yeah. So those of us over on the West Coast, yeah, you're right. It's kind of tough. And we've got a ways to go yet.
Yeah.
We did start early here.
Luckily, I had my breakfast at 5-something in the morning. So, yeah, we're just fine.
Actually, I didn't get any breakfast.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, Redmond this morning was shut down when we came into here because we started at the early hour for Pacific Coast of 7 a.m., trying to make it as good for many time zones as possible.
Yes.
Right. We're in Visual Studio, and we have got a... let me just figure out what it is I'm supposed to be doing here. Okay,
what is it you're supposed to be doing here?
What is it I'm supposed to be doing? So...
I think you're going to design an application bar.
I am going to do that. I'm going to go do it on the recipe detail page, our old friend. So here we go. Here's our recipe detail page. Now, in the... We can select... Just make sure the page is selected. I'm just going to bring the properties window up here because this is actually the easiest way of creating one. When it loads. Here we go. And select the page. And you'll see here there's actually an application bar entry in the properties. I can new one of these guys up and it will create me an application bar in the XAML. I'll show you that in a minute. I'll just show you that now. Which is, here we go, nothing in it as yet. Back to our properties. And then we can go in and create some buttons. So let's create some buttons in here. Let's add ourselves an application bar icon button. We can navigate. Let's go and have a look at the collection of icons that are selected, are offered for you in that are default in the SDK. So we can choose any of these. Camera, why not? Let's have a camera. And you have to give it a little bit of a text hint, so we can go photo like that. And we can OK it. And you could create a menu option. So menu, we could add a menu option. So you just put text in for that. I'm not going to do that. And here now in the designer, this is a difference as well. You actually see the proper picture, whereas in Visual Studio 2010, you just used to see an anonymous kind of...
Yes, you did.
Yeah. It didn't give you any
it's like
idea.
An X or something.
No, that's right.
I don't know.
And of course, in here, we can go and create a click event, which you could do either directly in the XAML. So we can go and type in here and say click equals and then a new event handler. And now we can navigate to that event handler and go and put some code into it. Here we go. So then you've actually put the code, so we might start the camera, for example. Now, to save time, I'm going to not going to actually code all that up. Let's just go to the finished version of this. And we don't want to do that. And it is our finished version, where we have got our recipe detail page, which has got now a fully populated application bar on it when it comes up. And we're going to run this version in the emulator, which just adds a little bit more of the standard. So application bars are completely the way you want to do offer common uses. And of course, application bars are also... There we go, we've got our camera thing on there. Application bars are very present in Windows 8 apps
Windows
as well.
8, yeah. Swiping up
swiping,
or down.
That's right. The difference between that ours and the Windows 8 ones is that you have to swipe on Windows 8 to make it appear. On
right.
the whole, you can programmatically show them.
True.
Now here's our main page. You notice this one application bar is actually minimized. It hasn't got any buttons. We've just got simply got an about page on it. And we've got an about page. Woohoo! There we go. We can go back and we can go off to any recipes. We can navigate to our recipe now. And there we've got a we can take a photograph. We've just created our beautiful. There it is. Isn't that the most wonderful whatever that was that you saw?
It was lovely.
So we can capture that for posterity and there is our Zara zipful. And
is that Oktoberfest?
And there's our picture. So we've now enhanced our app. Yeah, could
yeah.
be. Could be.
Yeah.
So now we've enhanced our app to allow the user to store their own pictures of their recipes. It's all coming, some nice stuff coming into this application.
People are going to love doing that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's the application bar button. So you see the little hint. You can get to the about page from there as well.
Right.
Good. So that's application bars. And moving on. Right, this thing, let's talk about screen orientation changes. So this is not something you actually have to do. At the moment, we don't have any support for orientation, for landscape orientation in this. So I have to stress this, not all applications need to support landscape orientation. But if you want to, you know, this is a nice thing to do. There were some phones, I don't know if there's any on the market at the moment, that had a hardware keyboard that slid out the side of the phone. Now, clearly for those, you're going to be using it when you're entering text, you're going to be using it in landscape orientation. So if you've got any text entry pages, it may well be worth supporting landscape on those particular pages, just for those users who have any of those phones. I'm not sure there's any on sale at the moment, but there
right.
could well be in the future. So, you know, being prepared for that is a good idea. Now, if you want to do that, again, this design tab, we've got help in Visual Studio and in Blend. You can actually change the orientation of the designer so you can see what it looks like. And all you need to do is, if you want to support both portrait and landscape, you change the supported orientations element in the XAML at the top of the page to, you'll see that by default it's set to portrait. You can change that to portrait or landscape. But, and that will be enough actually to support landscape.
Right.
Which might be sufficient, but
it
as you can see here, this particular one doesn't work so well. Because on the left you see there's the portrait, which we've designed, and that works pretty good. Now, if you just leave it and just change that tag and support landscape, yeah, it works. But actually what you end up with is something that is not usable. Because you can see there we've got the image. Underneath there, that you remember that scroll view where we've got the directions?
Yes.
It's now shrunk to one line of text. So
probably not very usable.
That would be kind of tedious to scroll one line up and up and up in order to see what actually the directions are. So what we need to do is think about this a little bit and maybe change the layout for a landscape.
You know, Andy, I'm having flashbacks to adapt your app.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes, yeah.
You know, and the, what was it, client software factory or something?
The mobile client software factory.
Yes, where you could design things when they're on the side and... So it's important today, just like it was back then.
It's always been, yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So we can do this. Actually, in those days, it was kind of hard.
It was.
With XAML, it's much easier.
Especially if you were designing for the OPhone. That was extremely difficult.
Who remembers the OPhone?
Does anybody remember the OPhone?
That landscape of design. Landscape,
yes, remember. There's nothing landscape about it.
No.
It was circular. And you could get O-mail.
Yes.
Anyway.
Moving on. Yeah, so grids are your friend here. So remember, we've used a grid to lay out our portrait. In actual fact, we have four rows on our grid at the moment. Four rows. And all we need to do is actually add a second column to it. So, but in portrait, there's nothing in that second column. And if you size things as auto, remember I talked about auto? It sizes
yes.
it just enough to hold the content you've put in it.
Right.
So if there's nothing in it, auto means zero.
Yeah,
so it has zero pixel width. And the other one, the other column zero, has a width of star, which says basically, okay, take everything that's left after you have sized any explicitly sized columns. So So there's nothing in all, nothing in column one, so column zero gets all of the width. So that's cool. And then when we move to landscape, then what we're going to do is basically shift the directions out of column zero and stick it away up into column one and actually move it from row two up to row one. And then you'll kind of get this layout, this new layout there that you can see there. Now that, again, you see that third row, if you count down from the row definitions, we've got the top one is a height of auto, which is just the name of the the recipe. The second one is explicitly sized at 240. The third one has a height of star, and the fourth one has a height of auto, which again is sized according that's sufficient to hold that prep timeline. So it basically means that star gets everything that's left, and it's going to shrink to zero because there's actually nothing in that particular row. Now, what you need to do then, how do you shift stuff from one cell to another? Well, you can do it in code. There's other more fancy ways that you can do this in Blend, but this is the simple way of doing it. So you just have you can hook the orientation changed event, subscribe to that event, and when the orientation changes, then you just simply move that direction scroll value viewer from one cell to another. And let's show you the end result of that. Back to the demo machine. All right, so we're going to run that on our emulator. So that has got those fixes in it. Here's our emulator. And of course, we're in portrait at the moment, and of course, it all just works the great way, the ways that we've always seen, and everything is good, and we've got our ingredients and that kind of stuff, and great. Then what I'm going to do is change the orientation, which you can do here in the... there we go, changed it around, and let's just stop it in here and restart it is the easy way. And here comes our application. There we go. So there we go, landscape support on the main thing.
Oh, and look, there's the text on the side.
Yeah, that's right. And here, Quiche Lorraine, there we go, beautiful. So there's our application bar with our camera thing. But there, we've still got good usage here and good readability. There's our picture and a prep time. Everything's visible. It's still got, everything works great. Maybe you could reformat that to do two columns. That might be nice because it's kind of... But
true.
So, you know, you can see we've actually got good support here. We can switch it back and it will automatically change back to the portrait orientation. So there you go.
So this event handling thing actually works.
It really does.
Wow, yes. That's amazing. Really and, you know, does. Just to show you earlier, Andy was talking about the application bar. And so if you look on my Surface tablet here, you know, you can see the importance it transcends all these devices. Obviously, we'll get it at it, you know, from a swipe off the side here on apps on Phone 8. But, yeah, they definitely have a role everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll definitely be part of your cross-platform story.
Totally, yeah. Good. So there we are. We've now supported orientation. So, like I said, don't have to do that, but it's a nice thing to do if you can. Next.
It shows you care. That you have empathy for the user.
And it goes back to those design principles we were talking about, attention to detail, you know, that mediocre isn't good enough.
That's
it's not saying portrait only is mediocre, but it's nice to go that extra mile.
Yep.
This one, though, is more important, if you like.
Yes, it is.
It is more important, but in a sense, you don't have to worry too much. So, these three screen resolutions. Now, I touched on this in the first, you know, the introductory sessions. We have now got three resolutions for Windows Phone. WVGA, which is actually what we had before, 800 by 480. We've now got two higher resolution devices, WXGA, which is 1280 by 768, and we've got 720p, which is 1280 by 720. So same height in actually raw pixels, but slightly slimmer. Now, what does this mean for us? Does it mean you're looking at us thinking, now I have to do three different he's talking about that presentation layer separation thing, and I have to do three UIs and all that kind of...
We had to do that for the Trio. Yeah. And a lot of other devices in the Windows Mobile days.
In the old days, we used to have to do that. But no, fortunately, we don't have to do very much. It's actually, there's a lot of support for you because what we now are working with as a developer, you're working with device-independent pixels.
Oh.
Well, yeah, so they're actually, you're working with, well, more might be more appropriate. That DIP means something to people, DI, device-independent
pixels.
So let's call them logical pixels.
Okay.
So working with logical pixels. So what it does is it hardware scales the actual resolution down to a logical resolution. So it means that when we're working, when your app is running on a WVGA device at 800 by 480, and the aspect ratio is 15:9, the scale factor there is just 1. So okay. This is, so you design your application for 800 by 480, which is what we've always done.
Certainly.
Now, what happens when you're running on a WXGA device, which is 1280 by 768? Same aspect ratio, but there it applies the hardware GPU scales everything up when it displays by 1.6. So it means that you design for, hey, what do you know, 800 by 480 again.
Hmm.
No change. 720p, okay, there is a slight change here. So this is not the same aspect ratio. It's a bit of a slimmer form factor. It's 16 to 9 is the aspect ratio. And the hardware scaling here is 1.5 times. So what this actually means is, after it has been scaled, the logical size of that screen is slightly higher, but the same width. So you're still working on 480 pixels wide, but you're designing to 853 high. So, okay, that's the only one that we're going to need to actually do anything specific for. So there we go. Actually, pretty similar now. 800 480, 853 480. Now, what can we do about that other one? That 853, that extra 53 pixels. Well, you could ignore it, and then you get some banding, but that's attention to detail kind of thing. We don't really want to do that.
So, is that you're a mediocre guy.
That's a mediocre guy. That's accepted the mediocre. We don't like that.
Right.
So actually, again, here we go. This is where our grid layout, our fluid layout that we've been doing here, is the answer. Because if you've got a star sized with a star in there, it's basically use whatever height you've got left after you've laid out everything else. You can have multiple rows with stars, and they could have a multiplier, and it just divides it up between the star ones. But essentially, the principle is it's use whatever's left after you've laid out everything else. So now, this is we can take advantage of this, and inadvertently, we already do it, because the directions there has got is already a star height row. Purely by accident, actually by design. Directions row is star, so it gets everything that's left. So it will use up the space on the 800 by 480 ones, the WXGA and WVGA. And on the 720p, the other ones don't change because the recipe name and the picture and the bottom bit all stay the same size, but the star size row will just grow to take up that extra 53 pixels. So it's beautiful, so that will just work. Now, okay, you're thinking, okay, so what's this nice resolution, these high-resolution phones for then, if we don't have to do anything? Well, what you do with actual images to support these higher resolutions is always size them for the highest resolution. So this is talking about image assets. So size them for a 1280 by 768 screen. Then when it shows on a WXGA phone, it will use that beautiful high-resolution image.
Right.
Then it will automatically scale them down on WVGA phones, and it will still look great on the 720 pixel, which is pretty similar resolution to the WXGA. So you can just supply one image and it will be used across all resolutions and scale it for the highest resolution. But if you really want to, if you want to be pixel perfect and you want to supply images for each of those three resolutions, you can do. Just include all three images in your project, and then in code you can get the application.current.host.content.scalefactor property, and that will return you 100 for WVGA, 160 for WXGA, and 150 for 720p. So you can figure out what phone you're running on,
okay,
and then use that information to load the appropriate image in at runtime and show it. So you can do that. Splash screens, actually you don't need these guys anymore.
Yeah, I heard that you don't need those anymore.
You could actually still show us a splash screen, but these days you're probably going to have to put some code in to make sure it shows for a bit and actually delay your app startup. But if you do use a splash screen, then again, size it for WXGA, and it will automatically be scaled to the other ones. If you want to be pixel perfect, then use the naming you can see there. Although notice, rather weirdly, it will use the right named one, but you still have to include as content in your project a default name, splashscreenimage.jpg, because that is the switch to the runtime to say, show a splash screen. It's kind of weird. The logic goes, have I got a splashscreenimage.jpg? Yes, I do. Oh, and do we have an actual resolution-specific one? Oh, I'll use that instead. Yeah. So that's how it goes. So again, talking about other graphical assets, application icons and tiles. Obviously, we're going to talk some more about these kind of things. Application icons, again, scale these for WXGA. And these are the resolutions you need to create for the application icon. It's 100 by 100. For the three different tile sizes, we touched on these. You can have small, medium, and large now. Those are the sizes you need to create those images for. If you simply upgrade a Windows Phone 7 app, it will scale them up. So that would be taken care of for you. I'll show you that later on because I want to move on.
Okay.
And keep,
good idea.
Try and keep the pace going here so we can try and get back on schedule. So.
Did you just say schedule?
I'm in the US. I know. I'm sorry.
All right.
Schedule.
Thank you. Thank you.
I kind of get stuck mid-Atlantic when I come over here. So some things come out as British and some things come out as American. So
okay.
Sorry about
that. But now that we've added UK English.
Yeah.
To Phone 8, I think it's okay for you to speak properly.
Thank you. All right.
All right. I'm here for you. All right. Mm. If it was a Phone 7 demo, you would say schedule.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So, yeah. We touched on this. We've got loads of great language support. And the new project templates have great support built right into them. So I've kind of, some of you sharp-eyed amongst you may have noticed some files in the Solution Explorer, like localized strings and appresources.resx. And, you know, what's all that about? Because it's because this doesn't change anything. This still works the same way it used to work on Windows Phone 7, but it was kind of one of those hidden secret sort of things, and you had to implement all this yourself. Whereas the kind of plumbing for doing localization is built right in now.
I think this is critical, having it up front like this.
Yeah.
How many projects have you seen people do, and they do localization after the fact? They bolt it on.
Yeah.
They forget about it.
Sure. So what you've got is this localized string, which is just a class that provides data binding support, really, for strings that are in resource files. And you need to define, so here we've got an example of data binding the application title to a resource, a string resource called application title. So it's now coming out of a resource file rather than being hard-coded to Contoso Cookbook. So this is a good thing, although Contoso Cookbook could be changed to Contoso something in some other language. Yes.
Yes.
And then you need to go in and add, you can go into resources and tick which support languages you're going to support in the app manifest, in the GUI designer for your app manifest. And then you need to go and create your, I've lost a slide here, that's kind of weird. So you I was looking for the resources.
It's really disconcerting.
It's gone. That's right. Sorry. Yeah, okay, it's missing. I'll show you in the demo in a minute. So then you have a resource file. So there's a resource editor. You can define all your strings in it, add the support in your app manifest, and then you need to actually translate your resources, string resources, into the different languages you want to support. So here we've got an example of doing Spanish, which you create your, you send that off to a translator and come back with an appresources.es/es. And there's the German example. You need to define the default language, which is the kind of fallback language if the user's own selected language on the phone is not supported by your app. And again, I'll show you that one at the end. Oh no, we're on to toolkit. So let's show you that now. Let's go to the demo machine. Actually, I'm just going to create you a new... let's open the completed solution. I was going to do a new one, but let's not do that. So now I've got here, we've added support for a number of different languages. I've got in here, English United States is the default language, and French support has been added to this application. And I've got in, we've got that localized strings, which doesn't change. But the, let's have a look at aboutpage.xaml, for example. The aboutpage.xaml has in it some data binding statements. Which is now binding to localized resources.application title. So it's coming out of our resource files. And here are our resources. We've got two in here. So this is the default English resources. There you go. Just an example, nice simple example. And there we've got our French resources. So we could run it in the emulator. And it's going to launch in a minute. And we're going to bring up our... there we go. Let's go to the About thing. And, of course, we're in English at the moment. Right, there we go. English, great.
It just worked.
It just worked. We can then go off to stop the debugger running. Go back to the emulator. I'm just going to switch culture. Oh, no. I don't want to go to the store app. Swipe across. Go down to Settings. I'm going to change the language. Where is it, Rob? Oh, there we go. Language,
there it is.
Language and region. And we're going to change the phone language to Francais. You could change the country and region as well, but that'll do for my purposes. Au revoir, it says.
Wow.
Everyone knows we're already, but we have to reboot. Restarts.
Excellent.
Using the French language this time. And when we start our app again, it'll pick up. It'll go into the resources, the resources that we've ticked in that app manifest, and it will look for French support. And in this case, it will find it. So we go, okay, cool. I'm going to use the French language support. Here we go. We're running again. Where is our app? Contoso Cookbook.
It's looking French already.
And Changement. And now we can go to Concernant instead of About. There you go.
Yeah.
And there is our... don't blame me if this is incorrect translation. It's, like, it's to illustrate the concept of this. You know, you got this? You know, so it may be correct.
You have to look over your shoulder the next time you're on the Eurostar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. So there we go. And it's nice and easy. And like I said, it's built into the project templates. Right. So the last topic in this session is all about the add-ons we've got in the Windows Phone Toolkit.
Excellent.
So the Windows Phone Toolkit is a not formerly known as the Silverlight Toolkit, and this is it actually comes out of the Windows Phone team.
Right.
Just the same as the SDK does. But the SDK is wonderful and full of great stuff. But obviously, there's a very high quality bar on that, and the release cycles are relatively slow. And you know, it comes out. We get a major release every whenever. But there's a whole bunch of stuff. The Windows Phone team are just a hive of creativity and activity, and they've got so much stuff they want to share with us. So they actually need an out of band way of releasing that stuff. So there is this thing called the Windows Phone Toolkit, which is their way of releasing a whole bunch of stuff. Which gets refreshed every 3 months or so.
Something like that.
Yeah, you get new controls and that sort of thing. You get all the source code. So it's a great resource for finding out how Microsoft themselves writes custom controls, because you can see all the controls that are in it.
Oh, that's great.
And it allows them to do interesting stuff. The long list selector came out of this.
It came out of that, right.
Yeah, and there's loads of great stuff in there. How you get it, it's on... well, you can go to Codeplex, but here you get the source code, which is also really the primary documentation source, because there is a sample application.
Right.
There's not much documentation for this, has to be said. They didn't bother writing much.
Is there a new way to get this stuff?
There is a new way. So that bullet there says no MSI. So there's no installer on here anymore to go and get it. So, download this and build it to build the sample application so you can see how to use the controls.
Right.
But the way you're really going to get this is on NuGet. So NuGet is a package... management system, which it's automatically integrated. It's already integrated into Visual Studio 2012, including the Express editions. This is new.
I love
in 2012, NuGet. And NuGet is brilliant.
It is.
Yeah, and it allows you to add libraries. So it goes off to the cloud, and there's a repository on there where developers can ship up their packages. And the phone team uses this. Microsoft uses it for shipping a lot of stuff. So on NuGet, you will find the Windows Phone Toolkit, and you can add it to your projects. Now, there's a whole bunch of controls in the Windows Phone Toolkit. In actual fact, what I'm going to do is show you on the emulator the controls, because it's more interesting than the rather boring slides in the deck. So if we can go back to the demo machine. Here's my emulator, which is still in French, but that won't matter. And I'm going to just go and find, I've got running in the background here. Here is, there's a tool you get in the SDK called the Application Deployment Tool. This is what you can use if you... you're working with a team and somebody ships you a zap, say, hey, try this out for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can install it onto an emulator or a developer unlocked phone. And we can browse to go and find a zap file. And I've actually got the Phone Toolkit sample zap here, which is the zap file for...
very convenient.
I just happen to have that ready.
Yeah.
And we can deploy it onto the emulator. And there's that emulator that's popped to the surface. It's deploying it onto it. It is complete. So if we now... No, not that one. Then down here, here's the phone toolkit sample. You can run it. And this is the sample application. So you can see all the stuff. There's interesting custom message boxes on there. So there's a message box with a checkbox. Would you? There you go. So,
oh, that's nice.
So examples of all this thing. Message box with a list picker on it. Oh, how cool is that? So this is stuff you don't have to build because they've done it for you. This is brilliant. Reusable stuff. And then you go back to the thing. And let's see. Date and time pickers. Rather weirdly. Do you remember the date time picker?
Uh-huh.
It was kind of missing from Combat Frame 1.
Yes.
It's here. It's in the Windows Phone Toolkit. This is the custom... So this is the thing. So this looks like the built-in ones. And there's loads of stuff in here. I'm going to leave you to... I'll just pick another interesting one. Here's a hub tile. Looks like one of the built-in hubs. So you can create your own custom hub tiles. These do animate. There they go.
Ooh, oh, that's very nice.
That's very nice. So you can do all sorts of stuff. Now... The most interesting thing, though, is the transitions, and that's really what I wanted to call out. So there's loads, a bunch of great controls in there. But if we go back to the slides, can we have the slides, please? And here we go. So a bunch of controls, yeah, go swiftly over those, because many more. There we go. But what's the most interesting thing in here is one thing that's really missing from app at the moment is that nice buttery smooth transitions, mm-hmm. the nice animations. Our app is coming together. We've got good support for different orientations and resolutions, and it's pretty complete. But what it doesn't do is as you navigate from one page to another, you don't have that nice turnstile page transition.
Right.
Support for that is in the toolkit. So what you do is you start by using, you need to comment out the you know that frame object I was talking about? You remove that and replace it with this transition frame, which is in the toolkit. And then all you need to do, it's very simple, is declare the namespace up in the top of the page. So you add that XML and S:toolkit line, all that stuff into it. And then you just plug into the page, this is just boilerplate XAML. You just copy and paste that, keep it in a file somewhere, copy it in. I actually got this out of that sample application. Plug that into the page. And actually, that's it.
That's it?
Yep. There's another one that's interesting as well, something called Tilt Effect, which gives a nice subtle 3D effect when you press on a button. You'll see it sort of tilt into the page. That's what it looks like. That's incredibly easy to enable as well. Just set toolkit:tilt_effect.isTiltEnabled equals true onto that page. You can enable it on individual controls, or you can just enable it all across the page. And you get a really, really nice, nice effect on that. So just last demo, please. Open the project solution. So here's the transitions and tilt effect built into Contosa Cookbook. It's very simple to add. Here's our Solution Explorer. Here's our main page .xaml. And I'm not going to bother about the designer. What the important thing is, here's our toolkit. We've got the tilt effect enabled. And here's our, down here, here's our boilerplate XAML. This is all the transition navigation in and navigation out transitions. Run that in the emulator and you'll see the difference. So it'll pop to the top in a minute. There we go. Loading, changement. Now, watch now. First of all, tilt effect. If I press on the left on the image, you can see,
I saw the tilt.
Did you see the tilt?
I did.
Go back again and do it again. Actually, if you tilt, tip and hold, touch and hold, it tilts into the page. You see that? So you get a nice tilt effect. And then, there we go. And that's been enabled. And you saw the page turnstile, there you mm-hmm. go. Go back again, turnstile. I don't know, you may not get this on the video feed at home, of course, if you're watching this in your office or whatever. But let me assure you, it's buttery smooth. There we go. And so that's just by adding that support in. So
That was easy.
10 minutes of work, yeah. 5 minutes of work, and a great value add. So all of a sudden, you've made your application behave like the built-in apps.
Excellent. That was good stuff.
All right. So let's just wrap this session up. Last slide, if we can. And here we go. So that was that. So quite a lot of stuff in that session. Navigation, about the forwards and backwards navigation, passing keys and stuff in the query string, Support for localization is built into the project templates, the different screen resolutions, and this really great Windows Phone toolkit with the page transitions and tilt effect. There we go.
I like it.
Great.
Good stuff.
So we're done with that.
Yeah.
The next session will start. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and Rob is going to take us through the local storage story. So from here on in, that was going through all of the app lifecycle, the key stuff you're going to need to do. Here on in, we're going to sort of keep on adding value and digging into.
That's why we're here, is to add value.
We're here to add value.
We're a value add. All right.
All right. See you in 10.